I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Because even though a lot of areas in Brisbane have boomed, many of the sort of blue chip areas haven't doubled. Maybe they've experienced 50, 60%, even 70% growth, but doubling, very few of them. But in these areas, it's possible, these low socioeconomic areas.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Torrin Shum, and in this episode of Invest Like a Pro, we're chatting with founder and director of Housefinder, Simon Liu. He explains why it doesn't always pay to listen to the naysayers, how to strike the perfect balance when it comes to choosing suburbs, and how buying at a lower price point in a lower socioeconomic area can lead you to 100% growth in just 2 years. While areas in Brisbane such as Logan, Woodridge and Crestmead may not be beachside, they're certainly worth taking a ride on, as long as you know how to surf these particular waters. Liu recognises buying in a low social economic area is difficult for some investors to consider, but the benefits and rewards at the end of the ride can be pretty darn swell.
As property buyers, we're always conditioned to buy the best we can afford. You know, the best areas, the best house, the best street, and in many ways, the best in terms of how we or our family and friends perceive that property. I think for a lot of us, you know, I don't want to say it's like an insecurity that we all have, but it's a massive purchase for anyone, and I think it's natural to want to be proud of that purchase in terms of being able to tell your family and friends that, oh, I bought this amazing house in this amazing suburb. But in my experience, and with a experience of a lot of my clients and colleagues and people who are, you know, professional investors, I guess you can say, that doesn't necessarily translate to the highest performance of property investing. So what I mean is, using my example, when I started buying properties in from day one, you know, I was gravitating towards, okay, I went to a mortgage broker, found out exactly how much I could borrow, and I was looking at properties at the absolute max of that affordability, and I was also focusing on compromising on the property itself to maybe getting to a quote unquote better suburb. So at the time, you know, the best suburb I could afford was an area called Ryde in Sydney. Instead of buying a house maybe further out west, which I should have, I ended up with a little two bedroom unit, you know, instead.
Yeah, this was in West Ryde, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, this one was in West Ryde, correct.
That's right. I remember this story.
I still own it, by the way. I've had the opportunity to sell it, but I thought it's my baby. It's my first baby.
You got
to
keep that, yes.
Interesting. I talk about being unemotional, but here I am being emotional about it. Look, when you get to a certain point, you can, you know, afford to be a little bit emotional about something, so it's all good.
It's a balance.
Yeah, it's a balance. When I bought this property in West Ryde, you know, it was negatively geared, negative cash flow. At the time, I paid way too much for it. And in hindsight, even now, when I'm looking at all the massive boom that Sydney has experienced, and if I had just put that money into an area that was possibly a little bit lower socioeconomic at the time, not only would have it had paved a way for me to grow a larger portfolio, but I would have made a lot more money on that particular property as well.
Can you just explain to the listeners what social economic, a lower social economic, would be sort of referenced to, so people can kind of understand?
In any major capital city, or in any area really, there are good and bad areas, or perceived good and bad areas. And then there's a lot of stuff in between as well. So, you know, a lower socioeconomic area is an area where it might be a large mix of renters. It might have, you know, at least printed in media, or at least, you know, the perception of that area is considered, you know, high crime rates, lower socioeconomic, maybe the demographics of the population living there is not as desirable, if that makes sense. And it's an area that, you know, normal, sane people would naturally gravitate out of. You know, they don't necessarily want to get into it, especially from an investment property standpoint. But I'm going to use, you know, Logan as an example, because Logan, literally 2 or 3 years ago, was one of those areas, if you jumped online, did your research on forums and things like that, it was bashed to death. You know, it was one of those areas that people were like, don't ever buy there, it'll never do anything, it'll never go up. You know, the demographics there are way too bad, and just really just
the negative sentiment on that particular area. And I'll admit, I looked at that area too on the recommendation to have a look, and look at Logan Lee, Woodridge, Marsden, all those areas. I even went up to have a look. And yeah, when I first drove up there, from my personal experience, I thought, wow, there's like trash cars on the street. There were, you know, vandalism everywhere. And I thought, wow, what have I come up to have a look at? And it kind of just put me off because I saw all that. And obviously in hindsight, when we talk about it, it's obviously done, you know, it's changed quite a bit.
We can talk about it now, obviously in hindsight, because the properties that I bought just 2 or 3 years back, for myself and even for my clients as a buyer's agent, have more or less doubled already. You know, 100% growth. And the growth has come about not because everywhere else in Brisbane is also booming, because even though a lot of areas in Brisbane have boomed, many of the sort of blue chip areas haven't doubled. Maybe they've experienced 50, 60%, even 70% growth, but doubling, very few of them. But in these areas, it's possible, these low socioeconomic areas. And this is what I mean when I talk about riding the socioeconomic boom. Whenever there's a massive boom cycle that we're currently seeing in Brisbane, or even what's happened in Sydney, properties become too expensive, especially in desirable areas. And that forces people to move further out. It's called urban sprawl. I'm sure a lot of listeners would have heard of it. And when they move out, they inadvertently gentrify lower socioeconomic areas, and these become the next quote-unquote middle class or more acceptable owner-occupier friendly areas. And that's exactly why, you know, a lot of my portfolio and my client's portfolio that have bought in places like Logan that were low socioeconomic have experienced so much growth and so much equity now that, you know, we're all onto our next stage of property investment. And the beauty with these areas is when you buy them at a point before that sort of a gentrification or that socioeconomic change happens, you buy them at the floor rate. You buy them at like the cheapest they can be. And the yields, the cash flow is typically quite high, you know, especially in comparison to other parts of Brisbane. So what that means is, for an average investor who's on an average salary with average savings, it allows you to buy more. It allows you to buy a larger quantity of these properties, which in turn exposes you to a lot more growth when that socioeconomic boom or socioeconomic shift happens. Does that make sense? So that's, you know, I wanted to make this point because a lot of people have that fear of jumping into these areas. I talk to, you know, clients every day, especially new investors. you know, oh, Simon, I really only want to buy within 10 to 15 Ks of the city. You know, I'm really not looking into these areas because of XYZ. It's too uncertain. They're bad areas. They're not going to do anything. I think that is sometimes correct with some areas, but you need to be selective even with these sort of lower socioeconomic areas. You can't be buying in areas that are, you know, maybe are too low socioeconomic, or maybe in areas that have intrinsically something physically there that will hinder growth, irrespective of what anything else is doing at that particular point in time. So being selective on these suburbs is important.
I want to add as well to this is the thing, you don't necessarily have to go into the particular suburb that has had a low social economic and buy the worst in that area. You can actually, there are going to be also homes or houses in there or investment properties that are in the good quality part of that social economical area. I remember this is the interesting thing when I was driving around. Yes, you kind of know which side was the really, really bad side of Logan. And then when you hop onto sort of the other side of Logan, you go, wow, that side looks really good, actually. It's reasonable and it's affordable too. That's the side that you want to sort of sit on. And what will happen, as you've just talked about with gentrification, is that eventually all that whole area gets cleared out. And a good example, and this is mostly for Sydney-siders, and I'm sure interstates would probably know, Redfern was a classic example of a very, I guess you can say, run-down suburb in Sydney. It's not far from the city, but it was very, very much considered as being the kind of area. And there was a lot of drugs going on in that area. There was a lot of housing commission. Yeah, all that, they're still there, but it's completely converted over to now a high-demanding area.
With a lot of character, a lot of cafes, you know, it's got that sort of influx of it's fashionable now to live in Redfern, you know, so it's kind of like the next Surrey Hills.
Spot on. And that's what I'm not saying that, you know, Logan's going to be like that, but maybe one day it could be. And people will look back in 10, 20 years and say, oh, you know, I'm living in Logan. Wow, it's a good suburb you're living in. Whereas 10 years ago, we were going, wow, I don't know if I want to ever live in Logan. It's like that kind of perception changes.
Yeah, I mean, people forget that Logan is literally just a council area. You know, you've got Daisy Hill, you've got like, you know, a lot of extremely sought after owner occupied suburbs, properties that are well over $1 million in Logan. And then on the same hand, you've got areas like Kingston, Woodridge and Logan Central, which are still considered probably one of the lowest socioeconomic areas in Brisbane and maybe Southeast Queensland. So it's about a balance. You know, with that said, I know a lot of people that have bought properties in Woodridge, Logan Central and Kingston, and they still made money. But I would say the risk of buying and holding onto those properties are a little bit higher.
Coming up after the break, Lou delves deeper into how that social economic boom works.
When you get into those, that kind of feel, I think it kind of sets you up for experiencing that growth a lot sooner. You know what I mean? Like sooner rather than later.
How we learn about building materials the hard way, but it was far from the end of the world.
But it's still rented. It's still rented. It's still producing cash flow to very good tenants, actually, might I add.
He shares when you can and can't afford to invest your emotions as well as your money.
If you break down all the, you know, all the white noise, I guess you can say, we're all investing to make money, right? We're investing in property, shares, businesses, whatever it is, to hopefully make some money.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Have you been looking for months and getting frustrated that each property you've seen seems to be a lemon? Or are you after distress, off-market, high cash flow properties in high growth areas, capital city locations? If you answered yes to either of these questions, you are not alone. For being a loyal listener of the podcast, Simon Liu is offering a free one-hour strategy session normally valued at $500 to help put together an actionable property plan. To get your free strategy session, simply visit housefinder.com.au and fill out the contact form or call Simon directly on 0415-626-342 and quote Property Investory. Lou, Lou advises his clients who are new to investing to steer clear of the lowest socioeconomic areas and to aim for the middle of the range so that they don't take on too much of a financial or a mental load.
So if you start off with a bunch of properties that are super low socio, the boom hasn't happened yet, you know, and you're exposed to bad tenancy issues, a lot of maintenance issues, it's going to mentally stop you from pursuing more properties and ultimately reaching your goals. So for me, what I'd like to do is I still like to, when we analyze like the right areas in these sort of low socioeconomic parts to buy, we still make sure they have that owner-occupier appeal, family-friendly, good amenities, drive around the streets, you know, they're nice looking houses, not trash and, you know, burnt out cars and stuff like you mentioned before, on the streets and things like that. So those are the areas that are next in line to gentrify. When people get priced out, you know, when your mum and dad gets priced out of an inner city Brisbane and they're forced, they decide to buy into more affordable settings, they do that same drive around. And they go, oh, you know what, Kingston, Woodridge, Logan Central is very run down. But Logan Lea, Eden's Landing, Bethania, Crestmead, Mars and Browns Plains, like these areas are, you know, quite nice. You can drive around, they're just a standard house, standard suburbia, you know. So when you get into those, that kind of feel, I think it kind of sets you up for experiencing that growth a lot sooner. You know what I mean? Like sooner rather than later. So yeah, that's called riding the socioeconomic boom. And the socioeconomic boom typically happens in line with a property boom cycle. Like I said, it's tied very closely to affordability. When a city booms, the inner city parts go first, or at least in this example, using Brisbane, the inner city parts went first. And then it's getting filtered out into these sort of outer areas. You know, if you bought several of these properties a few years ago, even today, you know, I think there's still so much opportunity in Brisbane, which we're definitely still picking up. I think you kind of just expose yourself to more growth.
Yeah. What I'd like to ask, since we are talking about you and your portfolio and what you've experienced as well, are you able to share with us maybe two of your properties that you might know at the top of your head that you purchased in those areas that have shown some really good, you know, examples to say? Because I remember when I was looking, this was maybe about 10 years ago, we could have picked up properties for about 180, 220. I remember you posted in property chat, you're picking them up like peanuts. And I'm like, that's like just going to a candy store. I don't know how much they're worth now, but my gosh, those were good times.
I'm a very stubborn investor. I bought these properties and look, they were really crappy houses when I bought them, you know, but I bought them cheap. And I bought them in suburbs like Crestmead. I bought them in suburbs like Logan Lea. And when I was buying them for around about the $230,000 mark. You know, this was maybe 5-6 years ago. And they achieved very little growth, honestly, you know, during that immediate time frame. And when I bought them, they needed a bit of work. We'll talk about a property I bought over at Logan Lea. You know, it was an old Besser block house. It was on a big block of land, 985 square meters or something like that. Fairly close to Logan Lea Station, all that kind of stuff. But being Besser Block, this was like my third or fourth property. So I was still quite new to investing. And I thought Besser Block was great because I knew I was buying a low socio area and I knew that tenants could have punched holes in the wall, you know, because it's literal concrete. But what I didn't know was Besser Block is extremely prone to cracking. Okay, so it's very slight movements in the ground, which all houses settle over time. Anyway, there's massive cracks throughout the entire property now, which has been like filled in. Obviously, it's tenanted, so I have to fill them in with a special kind of sealant. It's a pretty shoddy house, put it that way. But it's still rented. It's still producing cash flow to very good tenants, actually, might I add. You know, $230,000 we paid for this house. And now, literally, I would say maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago, you know, we had a knock on the door. An agent called me up and said, hey, you know, I had someone wanting to buy for $600,000. you know, because of the land potential. And anyone who knows Logan Lea knows that $600,000 for a property with decent land in Logan Lea is not far-fetched in this market. That's a classic example of, you know, an investor or myself biting the bullet and going against the grain. You know, I remember buying this house, and I actually drove up at the time to look at the house. And I think it was like my dad, because my dad's quite handy. So I think he wanted to come up and maybe help me fix a few things. And anyway, he came up as well. And the general sort of consensus was, what the hell was I doing?
I could imagine your dad like that, because, you know, I've met your dad and had a chat to him. And yeah, he's the kind of person who's very handy. Actually, same as my father, because we're both very similar trade. And my father would have said exactly the same thing. He would have told me. And I would have listened to my father. That's the thing about it.
Looking back now, you know, all respect to him. But they're not property investors. You know, they're coming from a point of care. They're coming from a point of what they know. Which in the property industry or the property investment industry is quite limited. So even though, you know, there was that kind of personal hurdles to get over to buy houses like these, you know, I knew what I was doing. Like, just, you know, I knew this was part of the strategy. I knew these areas would gentrify. You know, all those fundamentals made sense. It was next, right near the M1. Literally, I've driven to Brisbane and back several times, and, you know, it was like 20 minutes. 20 minutes drive to the city, 20 minutes back, you know, to the Gold Coast. It's easy. A lot of shops, schools and parks and transport, everything's there. Even though I bought a crappy Besser Block house, there were a lot of like really nice established houses in Logan Lea as well. So I knew that there was potential for that sort of socioeconomic boom. But more importantly, when I got it at 230, it was probably worth about 300 at the time. You know, I always bang on about buying good deals. For me, just purely numbers wise, you know, putting my blinders on about how I didn't want, would never ever live in there, all that kind of stuff. There was money to be made, and that 60 grand difference, of equity that I managed to pull out helped me buy a few more properties in Crestmead, you know, so that enabled me to buy more houses, in these low socio areas, which now, obviously looking back, has exposed me to a lot more growth. You know, it's kind of like owning 10 or 20 or 30 Logan Lea houses that have gone from 230 to 600 and still going, you know, at this point in time. So that's the power. That's the power of being able to sort of, you know, be unemotional and just kind of, you know, thinking about the strategy rather than how you feel about buying your next property.
And that's allowed you to be able to also grow into other amazing deals, which we've talked on previous episodes, like the ones that you purchased at Macquarie as well. You know, if you didn't have this kind of ability to be able to have built up that equity over that period of time due to, you know, what's happened over this period of time. And it's a matter of, you know, buying it and holding it for that period of time to be able to access that equity. You wouldn't have been able to purchase those additional properties that now you've turned into Airbnb and generate great cash flow as well too for you.
I mean, it happens in stages. I always look at property investing in stages. Just because we're buying these low socioeconomic houses, that doesn't mean that's not the end of your journey. You know, that's just the start of your journey. Once you've got your 5 or 10 established houses that's generating equity, generating passive income, they're solid, low maintenance. I mean, even this house in Logan Lea that's, I would say, more or less falling apart, the rental demand is huge. It's providing me with a good passive income. Yes, I need to spend a bit of money on it every now and then in terms of maintenance, but probably no more than any other investment property. You know, and because I guess of the expectation of the quality of the house and maybe the area, the maintenance that I can do on it or get away with, I guess you could say, can be quite affordable. You know, if I need to replace a tap, I just get the cheap one from Bunnings. You know, if I need to redo a bench top or whatever, a kitchen bench top, I don't have to replace marble. I can just go again to Bunnings and get some, like a one of the more sort of affordable options and just...
Why would you need to? It's a tenant's property. You just put the basics that they need and they're happy. And, you know, that's the most important thing.
Once you establish that portfolio of, you know, 10 properties and you got that going, then yes, you can target your inner city fancy renos like you see on the block. You know, you can do it properly, you know, or you can target, instead of doing like little subdivision sites, you can do maybe four or five subdivision blocks, which obviously yield a lot higher, a lot higher returns. Or maybe you can get into blue chip renovations. Maybe you can get into commercial, large scale commercial properties that actually give you decent yield. So, you know, property for me has happened in stages. You know, I've got my initial stage where I've got that set and forget. Keep bringing my initial passive income. If all else fails tomorrow, you know, I can live off. And then now I have the financial luxury to target more risky and maybe higher return projects as well.
I think what was also good that you touched on briefly, and we'll go into a little bit more depth about this, is the mindset behind it. Because at different stages of your journey, you'd have to change your mindset to fit, I guess, to ensure that you can overcome some of the challenges. As you said, you know, some people who you don't recommend when they're starting out at the beginning of the journey not to go and buy into those lower socioeconomic areas, because mindset-wise, they're not ready for it. But because if you've done so many of those now, you're comfortable with that, you know what the risks are, your mindset's in that headspace, it makes it a lot easier for you to transition. So I wouldn't mind just delving into that aspect about the mindset side of things, of how you've been able to, I guess, gradually overcome. Yeah.
I was the same as any other investor starting out. You know, very emotional, all based on how I feel, based on the expectations of the people around me to buy these properties. A turning point for me was the realization that had I done things more unemotionally, I would have made more money. And that's what we all, like, if you break down all the, you know, all the white noise, I guess you can say, we're all investing to make money, right? We're investing in property, shares, businesses, whatever it is, to hopefully make some money. And the realization that by being emotional about buying houses was an opportunity cost for me to not make as much money or make less money with buying these sort of initial houses was kind of like a light bulb moment in my head, meaning that, okay, every property I buy from now on can't be emotional about it. It's got to be about numbers. It's got to be about, you know, unemotional factors that would actually generate profit, you know, and that will enable me to build on that, build a portfolio on that. So, you know, it's definitely a hard thing to do. I remember buying each and every one of these houses. As soon as you sign on the dotted line, the doubt creeps in. You know, did I do the right thing? You know, what if these areas never experience growth? What if the houses are not up to standard? What if the tenants are bad? Whatever, you know, all the things that people tend to worry about. Another thing that actually helps is the price point of these houses. You know, naturally in lower socio areas, the buy-in is a lot cheaper than obviously more expensive areas. And mentally, it's easier to get your head around the fact that, you know, back then I was spending $200,000-$300,000 on these properties, but even now spending $500,000-$600,000 on a property is not as daunting as buying a $1 to $1.5 million property. You know, the prospect of getting into that much debt, the prospect of having to pay the amount of interest on a larger loan, the prospect of seeing what properties are renting in that area and realizing the cash flow is so bad, you know, kind of gave me a peace of mind. You know, and coming from that last point as well, cash flow, I think that is another point that enabled me to overcome that hurdle. Because when I was buying these houses for $250,000-$300,000, they were yielding at least 6-7% rental yield at the time. You know, so cash flow was great. And even now, when we're buying houses for clients for $500,000-$700,000, and they're bringing in $500-$700 a week in rent, you know, on the interest rates that we're now, when we do the cash flow analysis, they're all cash flow positive. So for me, especially when I was working 9 to 5, when I was still working 9 to 5 back then, having that sort of peace of mind that, okay, if it goes up, great. If it does nothing, fine. But even if it goes backwards, I've still got this cash flow coming in that's not going to put me on the streets. You know, it's not going to be jeopardize me in a position where I am struggling financially, or I have to sell the house, or, you know, whatever that case may be. So I think that coming back to the numbers definitely helps me make that decision or take that plunge at the end of the day.
It's absolutely so, so important when you mention that as well too, because when you actually have, say, for example, a property that pays itself off without you having to put more money in, that gives you assurance that no matter what it does, you can sleep at night. Because I know what it's like to be in debt, and also family-wise, to be in debt with so much when we purchased something that had such a huge mortgage on it, but it was also negative cash flow. And I think back in our generation, our parents' generation, I should say, they were hounded in saying, you know, buy a negative for negative gearing purposes, or negative cash flow property for negative gearing purposes, so they can offset, you know, their high income. But looking back at it, it was probably a very, very bad loop or spiral to go into, because ultimately you just get into more and more debt that you won't be able to pay off until, you know, hoping that the property goes up in price.
We see this time and time again with people doing house and land packages and off the plan units that is very physically appealing. I mean, who doesn't want brand new? But when you literally just, it's not even, you don't even have to go that deep. You just look at the surface of it and realize, oh, wow, I'm actually paying so much higher than what this property is worth. For that feel good factor, you know, even if those houses go up in value, you're just playing catch up because you won't be paid way too much to begin with. So anyway, I think it's a pretty important lesson for a lot of people or a lot of investors to, especially when they're starting out, to learn.
Thank you to buyer's agent Simon Liu, our guest on this special episode of Invest Like a Pro presented by Housefinder. Also, for being a loyal listener of the podcast, I've asked Simon to offer a free 1-hour strategy session, normally valued at $500, to help you put together an actionable property plan. To get your free strategy session, simply visit housefinder.com.au and fill out the contact form, or call Simon directly on 0415 626 342 and quote, Property Investory.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.